My name is Kyle Masita, and I would like to welcome everyone to our continuing series on cloud strategies for higher education. I'm joined today by members of Plante Moran's IT and cybersecurity consulting practices. With me, I have Alex Brown, Sri Chalasani, and Donna Fredolino. In a previous podcast, we covered planning your cloud strategy. Now we want to focus on cloud service providers and implementation. And Donna?
This is really where the rubber meets the road, right? I mean, this coming back from a lot of campus visits, we find that the questions that are being asked cover kind of four major areas. People are really wondering where to begin. What is a good starting point for a cloud service project? And then how can they develop what it is that they're really trying to do? How do they describe that to a potential provider or a vendor? And really fundamentally, they're looking at what are the characteristics of a good provider? How can they be certain that they're not being taken advantage of, that there's really a good track record of working with similar or like-minded institutions? And maybe the last one, but I think it's pretty important, is getting a sense of setting expectations on campus and how long a project timeline would take. And just having those conversations about these concerns, I know that what a lot of clients would be interested in having us talk with them about is how do they begin taking those first couple of steps looking at and evaluating cloud service providers. Maybe we should just dive in right around the topic of what projects are good starting points. Sri, I know I often will bring you into those conversations. You probably have some pretty helpful insights for the people who are listening.
So for somebody that has not dipped their toe into this cloud environment, so you almost have to look at the systems or applications that will have the least disruption to your organization. That would be a safe bet. I mean, for people that are more mature in this cloud strategy, that's a different story.
So don't start with payroll.
Don't start with payroll.
No.
Okay, got it.
You're not going to have a lot of happy people if something happens there. So when you look at some of the key things that probably have the least, that may have the least disruption to the broad user base, especially if you have any kind of development platforms, if you have customization of applications, best practices calls that you have a test dev and environment. So that could be a quick environment that you could move to a cloud, test it out from a connectivity perspective, from a performance perspective, and ease of use perspective. So that can be easily migrated to somebody else's cloud services. The second one is probably if you look at your infrastructure, when I say infrastructure, your servers and storage, those kind of systems. If you're at the sunset stage of those systems, you can take a step back and say, do I need to still maintain these systems on premise, or can I leverage a co-location facility? Meaning essentially, instead of me maintaining my data center, can I leverage somebody else's data center, or even go up the stack of that computing model stack and say, can I leverage somebody else's servers, somebody else's storage, somebody else's services, and essentially make my data center a lights out data center, or minimize my data center footprint. That could be another thing. Now, in those particular models, you as an organization, you can pick and choose how high up that computing stack do you want to go. So there's a great deal of flexibility there. And the last piece could be if there are certain applications that you are not currently using. For example, if there's a brand new fundraising application, rather than bring that in-house, you can look at it and say, does it make sense to procure that as a cloud service model? So you can test it out before you say, yep, this model works for our stakeholders here, and we'll leverage the cloud.
So instead of investing a lot of time in building the IT capacity to operate, as well as be maybe a specialist, an analyst, mm-hmm. on how to best use those solutions, the cloud is going to give them some choices for faster ways of getting there without that upfront investment.
Exactly. Obviously, as we discussed in the previous podcast, there's a lot of it is a strategy. It is not a on-off switch. There should be a lot of planning, especially from a security perspective, from a performance perspective, and making sure that we have all our I's dotted and T's crossed. We want to make sure those are all taken care of before we say, let's go with vendor X.
Yeah, and you need that description of needs. I think that's important. What are you trying to do, and how are you going to do it? As you've touched on, there's lots of different aspects, lots of different approaches. And I think in that, part of that needs assessment is helping to find the right provider, right? I mean, there's lots of providers out there. There's lots of varying degrees of capabilities, varying degrees of security and compliance that these vendors do, and it's a pretty large landscape, right? And I think, you know, as folks go out and try to do this, it's really finding the technical fit, you know, providing a non-technical fit. So who's going to be working hand in hand with their IT staff, and how is this relationship?
Even knowing where to start on that, though, I think is something where a lot of folks I talk with just say, help me get started. Help me identify what the resources are that would show me who's currently doing what. And I think professional associations, even EDUCAUSE, has, I think, some tremendous listservs where people share very openly even the level of agreements that they have with service providers. And there's some tremendous knowledge out there that I think can be tapped at low cost that higher ed is well served in reviewing.
Yeah, absolutely. And not all providers are created equal. I mean, you know, if you go to them and say, hey, can you do this? They're going to answer you yes. Right, we know that. It's just depending on the degree that they can offer it. I mean, you know, Alex, from a security perspective, we know that's a big differentiator among a lot of the providers that are out there. They have varying degrees of capability, right, and auditing.
But, like, what are the key things that we should ask for?
Yeah,
those are some of the qualifying statements right there you hit on. I mean, so let's say, you know, if for example, we're looking at a provider, do they have a SOC, you know, a third-party evaluation of their security environment? I mean, someone to kind of come in and independently affirm that, the controls are in place. I mean, that's good to know up front. That's good, the right question to ask when looking at the, we talked about last time planning, but from an implementation standpoint. Also, I mean, even compliance-wise, if we're talking where, you know, there might be a PCI kind of compliance for that particular university, does that particular vendor meet the requirement standard for PCI? Are they in compliance, and what is their compliance, you know, philosophy, or what are you doing to kind of meet that? That's certainly upfront when you're looking at planning out the right services. Again, we talked about looking at vendor qualifications, but maybe the ones that are fit the need for what we're trying to attempt to do. And then, you know, there's other things, just making sure that we've implemented the right framework, control framework, with or in line with that particular cloud solution or strategy. We have the ability to kind of understand our controls that will be taken into account and know what those controls are from the particular cloud application, or if it's storage, you know, where and how that will be locked down.
So is transparency important? I mean, is that what you're driving to, having the framework and transparency to... So I know what you're doing with my systems and data? That can be kind of challenging, right?
Yeah, kind of a layered effect, yeah. So we know the controls that we internally have, you know, an inventory of, yes, we review the access, we do the right kind of role access provisioning, but also we have our vendor relationship with the right vendor selected, so we know that vendor also has equal control. So we're at the same level, if you will.
That relationship is such a great point, Alex. I mean, I find a lot of times almost a preference to have providers of these services that you can sit with, that are geographically close to you.
Right.
I know that may not really be a key differentiating factor, but I think there's a comfort level there for many institutions.
You know who and how and where that is. Mm-hmm. And I think geographically that's important too, is my data being maintained within the U.S. or is it across and scattered abroad? And that may be a compliance requirement. If you're dealing with several contracts that have U.S.-based business type of dealing. So knowing your relationship, right to your point, Don, is certainly key to what and where my data is.
So, you know, if I, you know, looking at this, there's a lot of complexities of how, what, and how do we manage it. Timeline, Donna, are you hearing that being a big consideration?
Well, invariably, in addition to maybe a board member saying we have to go cloud, what we often hear is that someone just wants to know how long it's going to take them and how, what's the duration of these projects?
Right. I think there are two things we have to keep in mind. One is the cloud is a strategy and it's not a on-off type of thing there.
Right.
So it does take careful planning. And it's not a true, from a business standpoint, it is not to be viewed as a cost-saving endeavor, may or may not. So I think you have to kind of go in there with a little bit of an open mind. So the cloud strategy is not always a cost-saving mechanism, whether it's from a operational perspective or a staffing perspective. There are pros and cons of going to a cloud environment. One thing that we get quite often asked is, if I go to a cloud strategy, how much of my IT staff can I reduce? I think that is that'll be very premature to go. That's a very premature assumption to go in with. You should really look at how can I leverage my existing IT staff to bring more value to the organization, rather than saying how do I reduce my IT staff.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, I always use the aviation analogy. You know, the bigger the aircraft, the bigger the longer the runway, right? So depending on what you're trying to do with your cloud initiatives, it might take a lot of runway to get flight to it. So if it's something small, you might be able to do it in a short timeline. If it's a large initiative and you're really taking into consideration the governance, the people aspect, security, it could take quite a bit of time. So again, I think we've covered quite a bit in this podcast today. Again, we thank you all for listening. We in our next podcast series coming up, we'll have key aspects around service level agreements, ongoing management with cloud services providers, looking at security and an exit strategy as well. So we thank you all for your time. Thanks for listening.
Thank you again for joining us today. And for more information on higher education, please visit higher ed.plantmoran.com. Thank you.